Hi, this is Carol Edmonston, and I am here today with Days Gone By, and I am the niece of the late Sid Haas, the acclaimed children's author and cartoonist, and I want to welcome you to WGBB Freeport.
Welcome back to Days Gone By on WGBB, and I want to talk a little bit about cartoons and things like that. I think if I wanted to be drawn by a cartoonist, to be lampooned, sort of caricatured, but in a loving way, There's a couple that I might want to go with. Like, I don't know about the Doonesbury people, Gary Trudeau, because they're kind of pointy-looking and a little shifty-looking, even the nicer ones. Some of the political cartoonists would just be evil, like that guy in the New York Post wouldn't want him going near me, but Sid Haas, if granted he would probably make me a little tubbier than I am, I mean, I could stand to lose a few pounds, he'd probably pack 20 pounds on me, but he'd make me look so cute with those, like, big round eyes and all these round kind of bowling pin curves that I think I would make a really adorable Sid Haas character. Now, if you don't know who Sid Haas is or was, then you don't remember your childhood. You don't remember Danny and the Dinosaur or Sammy the Seal or I wish I'd known about Lengthy the Long, Long Dog as a dachshund owner that I am. But someone who does know and does remember the late Sid Haas is his niece, Carol Edmonston, and she's here in the neighborhood to talk about her uncle. Hello, Carol.
Hi, Dave.
How you doing?
I'm doing great. It's a little warm in my neighborhood.
We're in the neighborhood. See, I'm Dave, so this is the neighborhood. The kind of bad puns we make when we're not cartoonists. But where are you?
The Carol Hood is in Southern California, not far from Disneyland.
How hot is it?
Today it feels hotter than they predicted. I would certainly say it's in the 80s.
Oh, okay. Not too bad. Okay, enough about the weather. Let's talk Uncle. Uncle Sid. When was the first time you met Sid Haas?
My goodness, as soon as I remembered being introduced as a young child to an uncle that would visit us, just as a very young child. They lived, you know, in Long Island in Bell Harbor and would come to California a lot. So as a little girl, I was a very, very close uncle.
Okay, and you would see him at family gatherings or how often would you see Uncle Sid?
Well, you know, Sid traveled the world doing his shtick. You know, he would travel doing presentations at schools and libraries, and he and his wife had a very close relationship with my parents, so they would be in California at least once a year. So I saw him quite often.
So what was your impression of him? I mean, at what point, since you knew him as a tiny kid, at what point did you realize he was kind of famous, and also that he was a cartoonist in all these newspapers and all these books all over the world?
Well, you know, I always knew he was a cartoonist because he always sent us his books, but the books that I remember as a young child were the adult cartoon books.
I assume they weren't that adult.
Well, no, you know, and I'll tell you the thing. He has such a recognizable style in art, as you were explaining in the beginning. It's very simplistic. He used a lot of bold color, and all his characters were just very simply drawn. So I was always drawn to the covers of his books. The adult cartoons I didn't really care about. My brother and I think when we were maybe close to 8-10 years old is when he wrote his first children's book that we remember, which is very out of print now, called Muscles and Brains. But we always just knew him as our uncle who happened to have been as funny as my parents. I think it wasn't until my son, who's now in his 30s, was a youngster and I used to arrange for Sid to do his chalk talks, his little shticks at the schools, and I all of a sudden recognized him as a performer who also was my uncle, and I was amazed at the gift that he was able to give the children, really to inspire them and teach them how they could become their own cartoonists in their own world.
Was he a sweetheart, or was there kind of a darker side that you didn't see in the drawings or you didn't see in the personality, even among the family gatherings?
No, he was always just a really loving uncle. I think the part that has intrigued me in my discovery, for me, I wanted to honor his rich legacy, and I developed and created the website sidhoff.org. And so in the process of doing my research, I discovered so much about the man behind the dinosaur, behind Danny and the dinosaur, that his political beliefs as a young cartoonist long ago in the 30s. So that whole part of Sid is very intriguing to me, because he really had a lot to say and was able to take pen and paper and express his political views in the world.
Well, what were they, and how did they differ from the prevailing sentiment of the early 30s?
Well, I tell you, you know, they would be very relevant today. You know, long ago, when he had sold his first cartoon to The New Yorker at the age of 18, at about that time, he also, you know, was living in and had bohemian roots in Greenwich Village, and with a lot of his classmates would go to the Cafe Society, which was started by Barney Josephson, and that was a political cabaret and a lot of satire on the upper class. And Sid actually lent his artwork to the walls in Cafe Society, which was, you know, a lot about just a spoof on that upper class. And he actually penned a whole book under a pseudonym called The Ruling Clause, C-L-A-W-S-S, just really in support of the working class.
And, I mean, at a certain point, because of his success, he moved well past the working class. Did that cause any conflict? I mean, did he always see himself as a 9-to-5 working class man, or was there a point when you put in your third swimming pool, you realize it's almost a little hypocritical?
Well, I think he recognized, you know, when Danny and the Dinosaur came out in 1950, it's actually its 50th anniversary, celebrating its 50th anniversary, it came out in 1958, that he recognized with the huge success of that book, it was time for him to move on and you know, honor the gift that he was recognized for in really inspiring children at a very young age to read. And, you know, so time changes, and he moved on along with it. He did write an amazing book on editorial and political cartooning in 1976 that he featured 700 cartoons from about 165 cartoonists, which, you know, just really wanting to honor what these political cartoonists have to gift the world.
Do you think he had any kind of a rivalry, or maybe he knew and had a friendship with Dr. Seuss?
Well, he did not personally know him, but they certainly knew of one another. And they certainly penned cartoons for the same publications here and there. But he did not have the pleasure of meeting him. Hi, this is Carol Edmonston, and I am the niece of the late Sid Hoff, the acclaimed children's author and cartoonist, and I'm here today with Dave WGBB Freeport.
We're talking with Carol Edmonston, who is the founder and the publisher of SidHoff.org, and that's Sid, S-Y-D. H-O-F-F, Sid Hoff, the famous and kind of beloved cartoonist, both for children and grown-ups. What are some things that would surprise us, that we wouldn't know about him or guess about him from the kind of drawings that he did?
Well, what surprised me in my research on Sid is, you know, how involved he was, you know, as a young man in the political arena and standing up for causes. William Randolph Hearst actually declared his cartoon strip called Tuffy, about a little girl who did funny things, important for national morale during World War II. So that kept Sid from serving actively in the armed services. However, Sid, you know, long ago wanted to take off to Spain to help fight in the Spanish Civil War. I think this is part where the expression "Oy vey" came from in my family, because my grandmother was, you know, the ice bag came out to be put on her head for her high blood pressure, and she didn't want to see him taken off for Spain. So he tempered some of his, you know.
I never understood that. Somehow all the artists and intellectuals of that era felt like they had to go run off and fight in Spain. I've never before or since seen any kind of a war or conflict. You don't see Hollywood movie stars running to Darfur, putting on, you know, ammo. It's just something about the Spanish-American War was so, I don't know,
politically
romantic
to
those people.
There were many. He went down, I think, to the pier to see off his friends that were going over there, and most of them did not come home. Those early days, you know, with Hitler's rise to power. You know, I think even Sid, there was a quote of his, he said, you know, he had that urge to do battle with evil. It became irresistible. So he did what he felt he could, considering, you know, the wife, the children, the parents, and, you know, everything he needed to balance his life with.
Did he live a long life?
Sid?
Yeah.
He passed away in 2004 at the age of 91, so he had a rich life.
He ended up
contributing about 571 cartoons to The New Yorker, nearly 200 books, some of which he did the artwork and didn't write, but most of them he wrote. He's done several books with Alan Sherman on Hello Mudda, Hello Fada.
Yes, of course.
He did the artwork for that, and Al Campanis, who used to be one of the managers of the Los Angeles Dodgers, he did the artwork for Roger the Dodger. So, he's done a lot of books that have been based on true stories about Thomas Nast, the political cartoonist, and the SBCA and Al Capone. So he's really kept himself, you know, as a bridge builder. I look at him; he really touched many different generations and different socioeconomic classes.
And was he drawing and active right to his late 80s and 90s, or was he like out of commission towards the last few years?
Oh, I think it was just about the last, you know, 3 years, 4 years, you know, of his life where physically, you know, it was a little challenging for him. But well into his 80s, this man was still sending ideas to HarperCollins for new books.
Well, that's cool. So when was the last time you met him, saw him?
Well, physically saw him, it was when he was in his 80s. I mean, he was still coming out here, actually. I certainly have always kept in touch with him on the phone. Even in his last few years of his life, I would be on the phone with him maybe once a week, a couple times a month. He was a very, you know, he adored his younger. My mother was 8 years younger, and there was a very close relationship. So he's been a very close uncle, even though there have been 3,000 miles, you know, between us.
Because he lived in New York the whole time, pretty much.
Well, he lived in New York, and then in about 1950, he fled the cold country and went down to Miami Beach.
Well, that's where the Jews go. That's what we do. Yeah, okay. Any last words with Carol Edmonston, who administers SidHoff.org? Any really memorable anecdotes or stories about the life of cartoonist Sid Hoff?
Well, I always like to share this story. My parents, as I said, traveled with Sid and his wife a lot. So they were on a cruise once. They were in Spain. They had stopped and got off the boat and went to a restaurant to get something to eat. And Sid really wanted to have some smoked salmon. And the four of them, none of them could speak the language. There was a language barrier. So Sid did what Sid knows how to do. He took out a pen. And on the linen tablecloth, he sat there and he drew a picture of a salmon with a pipe in its mouth and the smoke coming up. And in 5 minutes, the man had his smoked salmon. So
marvelous.
You know, this is a great gift in having the ability to use that pen and paper and get what it is you want and need. And
lovely, lovely. And thank you, Carol Edmonston, for bringing us the gift of his memory of Sid Hoff's cartoons. And can people go to SidHoff.org and see, what can they see there?
Oh, I hope your listeners do visit SidHoff.org. There's a tremendous amount up on that website. In fact, there's an 18-page autobiography that Sid wrote in 1988. There are some of his cartoons, some family pictures, some articles, some interviews. There's actually an interview that was done by the Japanese version of Esquire magazine. I have no idea.
Huh.
No idea what it says at all, but it's up on that website, Dave.
Well,
all the political stuff about Sid is what I'm hanging on to, hopefully, to turn around and spin in a book. The book list is up there. So there's a tremendous amount of reading. And the mural that he painted for the Cafe Society in New York long ago is actually, there's a picture of it on the website because I discovered it with his signature missing in a local restaurant that reproduced it 41 times. So I'm still trying to find this...
where the original is.
Where the original, which I believe is floating somewhere around, you know, in the Hamptons. It was owned by Randolph Duke at one time, the fashion designer, who sold it about 8-10 years ago to an antique dealer back there. So it, all of that is up on the website as well.
Sidhoff.org. That's the place to go. Can you buy any of his books there? Or do you have to go to Amazon and eBay and places like that?
Well, the best place that you can go, I found most of his books through a lot of the places like abebooks.com. You put Sid's name in and many of them will come up.
Yeah. Ex Libris also?
Right. There's I was surprised. You could spend an entire day combing through and finding his books.
Well, worth it, I would think, to see his images, to see his designs, and his words, too, since he wrote a lot of the books, and very much worth it to hear about him from his niece, Carol Edmonston. Thank you so much for joining us in the David Hood.
My pleasure. You have a great day, Dave.